Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics try hard to make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars, and joining me as always is the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And writer and the Mork to our Mindy, Tony Esmond.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah.
What's that?
That I'm a writer. Yeah. No, everyone always forgets that. They seem to think I'm just sort of the hanger-on with the group.
No.
Yeah.
It's a new era for this show.
It is.
And as such, you're going to get the props you deserve, my friend.
Thank you.
Excellent. I wish I'd have gone with something different as opposed to hello.
You think
all right? So? All right?
Or something like that. Yeah, something cooler.
Street.
Yeah, you just be casually cool. Yeah.
You know. All right.
Dan walks into a bar and I'm like, oh, look at that guy. He's so chilled out.
Collars popped.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I heard someone recently, it's Adam actually from the Orbiting Pod. He was talking to someone and someone was asking about something and he was obviously something he didn't want to do. And at the end of this sort of long spiel, this woman was giving him that she wanted him to do something. He just went, yeah, Mabes. I thought that's the best phrase ever. I'm nicking Mabes. Mabes.
Tony Esmond, who is taking another step further on his journey to becoming the world's oldest hipster.
Stop shouting hipster at me. You did it when I was... He did it when I was in New York. I said, I'm going to a diner, and you just kept texting me with hipster.
Thank you for joining us again, folks. After our shorter episode last week, we really appreciate you being with us. A lot of people have been looking forward to this show.
Have they?
Yeah. They
okay.
Have. Yeah. I don't know why.
Same three idiots talking the same shit.
Yeah.
But this, we're going to be more focused now.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty of focus. We've got folk everywhere. But each show is going to have a certain topic that we're just going to start, and then who knows where we'll go from there.
Yep.
And this week, I think is a pretty decent one to get started with. Now, there's plenty of news about comic conventions happening, certainly this week and in recent weeks and all over the shop. So it was a no-brainer what our first topic would be. Now, conventions are a staple of the comic book world. They're a place to meet your favourite creators, get signed artwork, hopefully pick up some brilliant independent books, and like loads more. You might have met us at one or two. God help you.
Yeah.
You probably never forget that.
Yeah, never return.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure most of our audience, if not all, have been to a comic convention, at least in some point, whether it's a visitor or an exhibitor. I know for certain that lots of people have opinions on them.
Definitely.
Thank you to everyone who got in touch on the Facebook and Twitter when we put a little shout out about what this week's topic was going to be. We're gonna just read out some of the little comments we got and topics of discussion during the show, aren't we? I think we're gonna sprinkle them in, like croutons on a salad. We're gonna just sprinkle. Yeah,
croutons.
I'll have you know, I'm a millennial.
You love that phrase. You told me never to say that to you ever.
I've said that to you many times. Like, don't ever say that to me ever again.
Never stopped him.
Never will. That's very true. So we're not short of things to talk about this week, essentially. Conventions. Oh, lordy. But let's start with something awesome, shall we? Tony, you should be fully recovered from the mighty New York Comic Con by now. So tell us about the Englishman's experience in the big city mega show type thing.
Loved reading the blogs, by the way. He posted that when he was over there. They're fantastic.
Well, they started out as this sort of sarcastic blog. I thought, I've got to write about it somewhere. You know, you sort of feel the need, don't you? Especially in the early hours of weekday mornings when you wake up early because you're still on English time, you know. Mm. And John said, oh, well, I'm going to turn them into posts for Down the Tubes. And so I had to sort of cut down on all the F's and C's that I was putting into them. Yeah. But it was a sort of fun way of sort of dealing with it all. But I have to say, I think it's my 10th this year. 10th New York.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think it was the 10th anniversary this year. And best one so far, I've got to say. My favourite so far. It is an absolute fucking marathon, New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 4 days at the moment. There was a big conversation going on amongst the creators in Artist Alley. They're talking about making it 5 days. It was 10,000 people up on last year daily. So it was just absolutely jammed. I was chatting to Dan before we come on to say that if you wanted to go to a signing on the other side of the it's a series of halls, basically. If you want to go to a signing on the other side of the Javits Center, you probably had to give yourself half an hour, 40 minutes to get to walk there.
Bloody hell.
And it's just unbearable at moments, you know.
For those who haven't been there, size-wise, say you rated it against an MCM in the XL, yeah. How big would it be in comparison?
Well, the Javits is, I think, the biggest place you can hold it in New York. Hmm. It's pretty much, I think, it's either the first or the second biggest event now, compared to the big parade they have. Hmm. Bigger than all the sporting events in Manhattan. But here's the description of the Javits that always sums it up for me, is you can fit the Statue of Liberty inside the Javits Center, standing up. That's how big it is.
Christ, really?
Yeah.
I'm spat out my tea then. Blimey.
Yeah. So the Statue of Liberty, you know, the big statue, you can fit that in the main glass hallway in the entrance hall. It is fucking immense. I mean, go to down the tubes and have a look at it. I'll post some of the photographs on the Facebook page. But it is absolutely incredible in size. So there's probably three or four main halls. There's the huge business area, which is about the size probably bigger than the XL, with all the halls put together. You know, much bigger, I'd say. And then beyond that, you've got Artist Alley, which is in a building that's sort of attached to it. And then underneath that, you've got like a food hall, but you've also got loads and loads of halls where they do the talks and the releases and the premieres and all that sort of thing, you know. I've never been to it all. You can't possibly walk around it all during the event. It's just too much to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's pretty incredible. From a sort of creator point of view, I mean, I'm lucky to go out. The sort of group of people who we all meet up and go out there with is sort of growing year after year. So I tend to go out with Matt Harrower, Tash Healy, Mark Lamming. So we all sort of fly out together. We missed Teasmade this year. Johnny Teasmade usually comes out. And then we meet the Mighty Vander out there, who's just exceptional company. Adrian Hashimi, Amri. This year I was lucky enough to, having had Bob Fingerman on the show, he said, oh, why don't we go for a bite to eat on the first day? So the first day is a Wednesday, starts a Thursday. So I ended up going to Tom's Diner, which is when you started shouting hipster at me, wasn't it?
Yes.
Tom's Diner, which is the diner from Seinfeld and the Suzanne Vega song. Mm. So I went there for a bite to eat with him. And we sort of, I'll get back to this theme in a minute, but politics is the main talking point everywhere in America.
As it would be, yeah.
As, you know. Yeah. So we talked a lot about comics, and he showed me some pages of his new comic, and he showed me some framed Wally Wood, but he's got some Wally Wood framed, just incredible. And some Richard Corbin pages, just unbelievable.
Wow.
You know, really. I mean, this is a guy I've been a fan of since the early 90s. And just to sort of, we just sat down and had a chat, and then he showed me the new pages, and they are just blow your socks off good. Mm-hmm. Really good stuff. For the convention itself, it's the New Yorker, which is where I stay, is a sort of 5-6 block walk away. But it's becoming like a pilgrimage. So it's a bit of a sort of downhill walk from there to the Javits, which is down by the river.
Hmm.
And in front of you, you've just got a sea of people dressed in weird costumes. You know, it's becoming like that, you know.
How long does that take you, like 5-6 blocks?
20 minutes, I suppose. Because it's the, it's not streets, it's avenues, if you see what I mean. So it's the sort of larger block bits. But do you know the tube when you go to the MCM? You get on the Docklands Light Railway, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's just full of freaks. You know what I mean?
Put it nicely.
Yeah. It's a bit like that, but imagine New York streets just full of people dressed up, you know. The people who run the New York Comic Con, the staff there have got, you know, they deserve a medal. They're like saints most of the time. The crap they have to put up with people trying to dodge in doors. And there's a couple of moments where I managed to blag a pass, like a pro pass, to get in for a couple of days. But one day on the Sunday, I had to queue up, which is one of the quieter days. And it was just like, it was like Dawn of the Dead. We're all, you know, the shopping centre, is it Day of the Dead?
Yeah. I would love to see you as Dawn a zombie, like Dawn of the Dead.
Pressed up against the glass.
Yeah. It was like that. Everyone was like pressed against the glass, and you know, I was fucking horrible. And I was standing behind in front of someone who was talking about their love for Squirrel Girl to his wife. I'm thinking, fuck me, darling. I think you need to find a husband. Do you know what I mean? Well, okay, mention it. Like, okay, I'm cool with that, but don't go on about it for half an hour. I was getting sick of it. Never mind. She's married to the fucking geezer.
Yeah.
So the Party Central tends to be the Mighty Lemmings table. So that was Brent Schoonover, who was sharing it with him this year. He was great company, actually. Good geezer, I have to say. Really good. He did quite a few commissions as the weekend went on, and I put a couple up on Twitter. Just outstanding stuff. And he's actually listened to the show, which I was quite impressed with. Cool. So I apologise for that, Brent.
Oh, thank you for listening, Brent.
Cheers. Yeah, thanks.
Got to chat to Tristan Jones, who's working on the Aliens book. I sent you a message, didn't I? He's listened to a couple as well. Good lad, he was.
Australian creator?
Yeah, he is Australian. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah, yeah, that's him. Yeah, him and Vanda, both from Australia. I got to chat to Gabriel Hardman a couple of times as the weekend went on, and I got a copy of his new book for you, actually, Vince, signed. Just sent you a picture of him holding and smiling.
Yeah.
Not knowing what he's doing, looking a bit uncomfortable because I was being a bit sort of fanboyish. But one of the main bits I really like about it is you get to see just absolute classic artwork. I mean, I was holding Kirby pages in my hands, you know.
Wow.
Kubert, Ditko, Sienkiewicz, Buscema, Stalin, you know, and they're just there for boxes and boxes and stalls just full of this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Daniel Warren Johnson, he was good. Me and Vander spent a long time chatting to him. His artwork up close, fuck me, it's even better than you see it on, you know.
Really?
Oh my god.
I saw that photo of you with Brian in front of it, and it was like, fuck, you know, that looks just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, was that the one that was entitled Suck It Vince? I think.
Yeah. That was the one. It was basically a Star Wars shot, wasn't it? Of kind of like some fighters zooming in.
Just incredible stuff. And he won't sell it. Vander kept saying, how much is this? No, I'm not ready to sell it. You sure you're not ready? He was like this. Yeah.
He's also a supremely nice man, isn't he, Daniel?
Oh, so nice. Yeah, so nice. I mean, I almost had to insist on paying for something. I just felt bad. You know, he said, no. I said, no. I'm paying for it. You know. Table-wise, in the sort of commercial area outside of Artist Alley tends to be where we all meet. You know, it tends to be the sort of RV point for everyone. We'd all end up there. We'd all go on little sort of searches for back issues or, you know, Lego, whatever people want to get. But back there is where you're headed. But don't think it's just an alley of artists. It's fucking huge. It's bigger than the MCM, one of the MCM halls, you know.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Just incredible. But I'd say probably my favourite table of the weekend was the Valiant table. Great interaction. Loads of sort of special deals, loads of sort of variant covers and T-shirts and stuff you didn't see. And if you walked over, they'd say, oh, you know, you're a Valiant reader. What sort of things do you like? You know, absolutely, you know, spot on people.
What day did you go over and see them?
I went there the first day, Thursday. And then I think I saw them on the Saturday. I took Vander over and he bought a couple of books from them, the Valiant. And they had a deal on trades. I think it was $5 for $25, which is a great deal.
Bloody
hell. That's a steal.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I know, yeah. But they had a dollar a comic for Jumping On Point comics. So they had like laid out like 10, 12 comics that are all Jumping On Points. And you
buy that's such a good idea.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah. I've obviously pimped the podcast because we thought we might get some freebies.
shameless.
And then my favorite, the other best bit of Artist Alley was watching people draw. So... funny enough, we were just talking about it. Eric Larson. I sat there and watched Eric Larson draw for like 10 minutes while he was chatting.
Cool.
Stuff. Have you ever seen Eric Larson draw?
No.
No.
Anyone listening to this, look at a YouTube video of Eric Larson draws. He kind of draws with his wrist bent, his hand almost backwards.
Yes.
I've seen a photo of him do it. It's kind of weird.
I'm going to call the guy weird.
It's very loose, isn't it? I think his pencils are very, very loose, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. It's almost like he's using charcoal. I'd say it's almost a little bit like that, the way people sometimes use charcoal, you know. I mean, more detailed than that, but it's sort of the way he draws, it's sort of almost like drawing backwards. It's like drawing in a mirror almost, the way if you look at it. Really cool. Watch Bill Sienkiewicz do some stuff. Ed Benes, Steve Dillon, watched him draw some Preacher stuff and some Punisher stuff. Paolo Rivera was there. Just Gabriel Hardman was watching him draw. Just Chris Burnham. You name
What's it, the footfall like in the Artist Alley?
Mostly still mad.
Yeah.
But you can stop and look at stuff.
Okay.
In the main hall, it's hard to stop because it's a sort of sea of people.
You just constantly got to keep shuffling forwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Back issue area, it wasn't too bad. Even that was a little bit difficult at times. But the main hall, it just unbearable. There's a big sort of lobby area, and you're just walking through that, and that's where they have like Black Sails and Star Trek and all these had sort of stalls. You can have pictures taken in green screens and, you know, all this sort of thing. Ash versus Evil Dead and South Park had a big presence out in the car park. You know, it seems to be where everyone
really?
This. Yeah, and there's huge queues to get in and see that. It's the main hall is like an MCM with more back issues and original art, and the artist alley is more like a slice of more prose, but something like Thought Bubble, really, but bigger, much bigger than Bubble. But yeah, it's, I would recommend it. Anyone who wants their eyes open to, you know, and it's not just like a lot of current UK comic conventions where it's just about small press and indie or recent books. You know, there's a real interest in historic comics. You know, people will talk about Kirby, for example, and they'll talk about, you know, old Marvel books and old DC books and Charlton and, you know, this sort of thing. Really, really
yeah.
good. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Kirk Van Wormer, he was a good guy. He was sat next to Mark. And he's done loads of DC animation work, and he did some work on Chasing Amy as well, actually, which is pretty cool. I've just had a couple of other people of note was Jim Marfood and Dave Crossland, who were just brilliant company. And I know you guys have seen Harrow's work, haven't you? Matt's work,
yep.
yeah.
And he's a huge fan. And I've never seen anyone light up more when Marfood looked at his work and said that this is the shit. And then they had a picture together. It was like the best thing ever.
Yeah. Awesome.
And Dave Crossland is fucking top bloke. Absolutely top. Can't speak more about him. And I finally got to meet Man vs. Rock.
Oh, brilliant, yes.
It was fucking mental in real life.
As mental as when he was on
the
show.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Kev's getting mad. Got married this weekend. He says, I don't know, I'm going to fit it in. I've got loads of conventions on. and I said to him, why have they put, you know, he put like a, you know, like a manga kitten story, you know, like manga cat or something,
yeah.
you know, Hello Kitty type thing. They were next to that. And he was saying, I said, fuck me, they put you in the wrong place. And they said, yeah, I know. Do you like all ages comics? Well, look at this man jizzing on a rock. Yeah, that was his like.
That's a good bit of juxtaposition, though.
Kind of. Yeah. It's like he'd get you in a headlock, you know, make you buy his comic. But yeah, well, we will love that book, and it's brilliant. I know.
They're worth following on Twitter as well, because they take pictures of people with their book. Do all of those people buy their book?
I think so. Yeah. Oh, they do well. Do really well. Yeah. I wouldn't let them take a picture of me, so I took a picture of them. So they kind of like that. But yeah, top fucking brilliant company. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alan White. Got to chat to him. It was his birthday. Actually, his happy birthday for last week, Alan. He does the Power Principle comic. He's
happy
a
birthday.
Friend of ours, isn't he? Yeah. Yep. He's good. Dad. Just too many to mention, mate. Really, it's basically up early. Everyone meets for breakfast. We all head to the convention. Depending on whether you're a pro or whether you've got a queue up, you all sort of end up meeting up inside. There is a way to get food in there. It's just a pile of shit in a box that they give you. You know, because everyone's so dehydrated and hungry, they all go to this sort of pile of shit in a box stall.
Yeah.
And they all sort of sit there eating it downstairs. And then everyone's out at night, so there's always something to go to. There's always parties, and we always end up going somewhere stupid. And then, of course, on the final day, you'll go to Midtown Comics and buy more comics.
Yeah. You were saying at the beginning about the political angle overshadowing. You went to see the second presidential election.
Yeah.
The comic creators.
That was Sunday night. So it was sort of post-con. Everyone's a bit knackered. So we said, well, why don't we go for a bite to eat? And a friend of ours, Adrian, he lives up in Harlem. So he said, oh, there's this Harlem bar. Why don't we go there? And we went and watched the Trump-Clinton debate, the second one, this will be. And it was like watching a fucking football match. It really was.
Really?
It was cheering and booing, and everyone was like, you know, drunk. And it was, I've never seen a more sort of energized nation around the political situation. Even us with Brexit, we were nowhere near that.
Mm.
You know, imagine going to a pub and watching people, you know, a party political broadcast.
Jesus Christ.
It's not happening, is it? But over there... Fucking hell. Honestly, I mean, we stay away from politics, but Jesus Christ, if Trump gets in, there's a lot of people moving to it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. Yeah.
The only thing to consider, well, a quick word on that. Kind of, it's, I don't like the idea of it being like viewed as entertainment. Do you know what I mean?
I agree.
That's one thing I would say. It's like, this couldn't be more serious what we're talking about when we're doing politics.
Oh, they're cartoon characters. They really are. I mean, I genuinely think America's just got to wipe its mouth, walk away, and say, let's start again, because this has just gone fucking mental. Yeah.
Is the whole kind of without getting too far, I think the whole politics of where we're at the moment is so fucking weird.
Yeah.
We're all over the shop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's getting worse. I mean, it daily, you know, I've got that interest in having been there and heard it all. And it's 24 hours on the news, you know, people are talking about it, and I'm paying attention to it now, and it's just got worse. Yeah,
so fucking Lex Luthor
getting the White House, basically.
It doesn't seem to be anyone discussing topics and coming to a best consensus. It's like them and us all the time on everything. Yeah. If we were us, we're the best, and if you're them, you're a fucking load of idiots.
Oh.
And then there's no kind of meeting in the middle and try and work out what's best. I don't know.
It's a weird situation. And, you know, we live in a sort of a fairly sort of liberal environment, don't we, as sort of artists and writers and stuff like that.
Definitely.
But parts of America will vote for him. You know, it will be a decent competition still, even at this point, with all the outrageous revelations that have come out about him. You know, he will win certain states because people won't vote for women out there.
No.
Yeah, and they think they're Republican through and through rather than actually considering the prospects of having a mental person in the White House, you know.
A picture of a lady with a T-shirt that said, Trump can grab my pussy, with an arrow pointed down. And I was just like, I just can't believe it. One minute they're worried about people going into the wrong toilet, being the wrong gender. And the next minute they're fucking wearing a T-shirt saying, grab my pussy. It's just beyond it. I just don't understand.
Politics has been turned into a lot, like a lot of things, even comics, politics has been turned into a catchphrase.
Yeah.
You know, we're living in the Twitter generation where it's got to be 140, you know, characters or less. Mm. Otherwise, they're not going to take any interest. Well, the world's a more complicated place than that, and so is a lot of the issues are, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so is that. But I mean, it didn't overshadow the convention, which was fucking the bollocks. Do you know what I mean? It really was. You know, I think I went out with like 5 kilos in a bag and came back with about 19. Yeah. And then you get on the plane and everyone on the plane is like, you go for a wee, and because I came back on an overnight flight, and you go to the toilet and everyone's reading comics with their little lights on, you know.
Brilliant.
It's like that. It's just brilliant. Yeah, everyone, you know, you spot artists sitting in the terminal waiting to leave and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it's very good.
If I was to ask you, what did the New York Comic Con do well that UK Comic Cons don't at the moment, in your opinion?
Yeah, interesting.
It seems like they do a lot of catering to the cosplay stuff you're saying, like with the green screens, and I presume that's only a matter of time before that comes to the UK if it's not here already.
I think it already is, isn't it? I think so.
Okay.
I think also because obviously Artist Alley is awesome, but New York Comic Con is also a massive multimedia show, like Tony said.
Yeah.
You've got all these TV shows and, you know, all of the cosplay and everything going on. So in that respect, it's similar to some of the things you'll see at an MCM or, I don't know, a London Super Comic Con or something. But because in America, I guess, and also because it's New York, the focus is, you know, they're definitely, comics are more of a thing over there.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bigger thing.
Yeah.
So they've got they can have the numbers, can't they, for a big event like that.
Yeah, there's no snobbiness about areas of comics over there either. There's no sort of, I think in England, certainly at conventions, there's a little bit of a divide, isn't there?
Definitely.
We've got the arty comic conventions, and we've got the MCMs and the London Super Comic Cons. Mm. And I think there's no snobbiness about a good comic over there. You know, you can have Jim Marfu next to Eric Larson, next to Chris Claremont, you know, in a line of people. You know, you can have Frank Cho, and, you know, and then the more sort of, well, what can be seen as artier or anime friendly, or, you know, you can have them all in the same room. Nobody cares, and people will look at each stall and they will talk to each person. Well, certain companies and, you know, small press people probably wouldn't consider the London Super Comic Con as a place they'd want to sell their comic, you know?
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah. Over there, I don't think there's that divide, thankfully. Mm. Yeah. I can see it changing over here, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sound like you had an absolutely fantastic time.
Oh, it was brilliant, mate.
As always.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
It's definitely on my list to do at some point in my life.
Yeah, the bucket list. But what are the door prices like?
They're not actually too bad. I can't remember what I paid for mine now. I'll have to look it up and let you know for next time. But
and also,
I paid for it in June, my ticket, and that was late. They put the tickets on sale late this year. Yeah, it's usually May. I mean, we'd all booked our flights and hotels long before the tickets became available, so we're all sort of desperately waiting to refresh the screen so we can actually buy one. But yeah, it's reasonable. It's not too bad. Not unmanageable. But then again, it's a money-making machine with them when you get inside.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's 4 days, and they're thinking about making it 5 days.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if you're a comics fan, just the idea of a five-day convention, do you know what I mean? It's like an explosion, isn't it? That sounds like the greatest thing in the world ever. But in reality, Obviously, it'll be busy for those 5 days. I have no doubt about that. But in terms of burnout, how by the end of the fifth day, whether it be a visitor or an exhibitor, how burnt out do you think you'd be by the end of it?
I think if I'd attended without knowing anyone on my own, I think 2 days would have been more than enough. But I think it's because, I mean, through the show even, we know quite a lot of people there, you know. I bumped into, who does Wart?
Chris Welsh.
Chris
Welsh was wandering around. Just out of the blue, but didn't even know he was there. You know.
There was quite a few people from the UK scene that actually were there.
Yeah.
Joe Glass.
He was there. I didn't see him. That Staffordshire course, they were mentioned.
Tally Bertram.
She was there. Didn't see any of them. Yeah. So, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't see any of
them. That was like a loaded pause there.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I didn't see any of them, but there you go. But it's such a big event, they could have been there, I don't know. I think because I knew people and because I wandered around, and also, you know, there's a big thing about getting a commission. If you get in early on a Thursday, you'll get on people's commission list, but you might not fetch it till Sunday, you know. So there's a big thing about everyone sort of legging it in and getting to, you know, Frank Cho's table or Daniel Warren Johnson or, you know, people who are doing commissions and getting their list. Jam Pieces was more popular this year. There was a lot of Jam Pieces going on. Jason Wood, a good chat. He's top bloke, Jason. I've got an awful lot of time for him. Very polite guy and, you know, clever guy. And he's got, like, loads of Jam Pieces on the go.
That's so something you don't really see over here in the UK, Jam Pieces.
That's true. Yeah, you really don't. For those that are uneducated around that, well, it's not an education, is it? It's just a thing. But basically, you choose a theme. Some people might choose Legion of Superheroes or Avengers or Star Trek or something like that. And they divide a page out into sort of sections, and they get a different artist to draw different characters. So on the same page, you can have, you know, Mark Lammy doing one character, Brett Scunaba doing another, you know, Gabriel Hartman doing another.
There'll be headshots, won't they? That you'll have like 12 squares on a page.
Yeah,
Of your favourite X-Men, and then you go up to them and just sort of say, do you, I mean, normally, I'm guessing they just draw whoever they want, do they?
Usually they say, oh, who have you got left? Something like that. And you say, well, I've got Beast, or I've got, you know, Archangel or Colossus. And they go, I'll do a Colossus. Some of them charge, some of them don't. Yeah. Depends who and what and how busy they are and, you know, all this sort of thing and who you are and if they're a mate of yours or whatever. But yeah, some charge, some don't. Some will charge up to sort of, you know, $40-$60, some people.
It's something I would actually like to see people doing in the UK. I think, you know, there's so many great artists out there that just
the fucking pressure to draw on that, though, if you're like one of the last ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, fuck. Can't
you've got
this
Jim
up.
Lee, and you've got to do a character next to Jim Lee in the square next to it or something, you know, it's like,
it's a double-edged sword, doesn't it, because it pushes you to do the, because whoever... If you look at the page, you can see all the ones that go before, and you're like, right, I've got to outdo all of them. But at the same time, if you have like a huge name, it could be quite imposing, couldn't it?
Yeah. Right, trying to outdo Jim Lee.
Yeah. I think you could do it, Dan. Come on.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You knock your bottle of ink over. It's a...
I think from a personal point of view, I'd find it a little too stressful because I like to get commissions and I've had a couple of incidents over the years where I've asked for a commission and I've gone back and they still haven't done it. So you go back last thing on a Sunday and they still haven't done it. You know, you think, do you get them to send it to you? What do you do? Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I think sort of leaving it with people and collecting it and taking it to the next person and stuff. I don't think it's something you get done at one convention. I think it's something you have to do as a sort of almost like a yearly convention season project, you know? It's fun. There's the big discussion at the moment, isn't it? It's going on about the price of original art compared to the price of commissions. And original art will always go up, and commissions might not necessarily go up.
Okay.
And a jam piece is a sort of slightly personal thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, what's the resale on that? Not that I'm certainly not someone interested in resale, but a lot of people who collect OAR. And I think the resale on something, some original art like that is going to be less, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But you might like some of the artists on there and some of them need no interest whatsoever. So,
yeah,
that may not appeal to you. Whereas if it's a piece by Jim Lee, for example.
Page of a comic you love. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for me personally, commissions are a highly personal thing. I, you know, it's, it's something you do, you ask for yourself, isn't it? And you've got that personalised piece of artwork.
Yeah.
So I'd never think about selling that on. I wouldn't think, you know, for a lot of people, it wouldn't mean anything. But to me, it's priceless.
Yeah.
God, I'm so deep.
Yeah, but having that page, you know, someone might be desperate for, I don't know, I've got some Master Kung Fu pages here, you know, I'm desperate for that Galassi page you've got, you know.
Yeah, someone might be trying to complete an issue. Might,
yeah.
Might have that sort of thing.
Value-wise, I think it's more. And I understand that's how the market works, from what little I know of sort of dipping my toe in it, but yeah.
And also that's the kind of snapshot of a period, isn't it? A comic page.
So. And you've got that only page. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible, you know. You've got that page that's appeared in Essential and a hardback and a, you know, monthly.
Yeah, exactly.
Issue. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that. Yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'd recommend it, guys. I mean, I know aren't you going off there soon, Vince, aren't you?
I'm going to New York, yes.
Yeah, I'd recommend next year, mate. You should do it. It's so good.
I mean, the thing about it is, it's just money, isn't it?
It is money, yeah. Yeah. But you know what the thing about it is, and I was chatting to Vander about this, and he was saying, oh, I've been so busy with the Saucepans recently, you know, I need a bit of an adrenaline injection. So we went around and we looked at some original art, and like, after about half an hour, he said, like, put such a positivity. He's a positive individual anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, the positivity in the place for creating stuff and drawing stuff, and, you know, it's just really great. There's no sort of downer. You come away, you're energized, you know, I think, to write stuff and to stuff, you know, you really do. And you can ask advice to these people. Chris Claremont was sitting on his own at a table. Eric Larson was sitting on his own at a table. You know, all these people, you can just walk up and chat to them.
That's amazing. Yeah.
You know, I spent sort of 10, 20 minutes chatting to Jim Marfood, and I'm thinking, this is brilliant. If this geezer turned up at Thought Bubble, you wouldn't get near him. You know?
Yeah.
But in New York, because there's so many creators there, you can spend the time and chat to people, you know, who you've been fans of for years. Yeah. So it's interesting like that. And that's one of the reasons I like it so much, especially on the Thursday, getting there nice and early on the Thursday. You can spend your time talking to people. Really, really interesting. Yeah.
Nice
one. Brilliant.
There you go.
Do you have any
fantastic lead-in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tony's probably broke now as well after that, after that trip.
Yeah. We've got a few planned.
So comic conventions, there's a lot going on at the moment. Obviously, Tony's gotten back. And just after Tony got back, some news came out, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Shall I lead into this bit?
Lead us in, Mr. Esmond.
Okay. Right, so we discovered that this year, recently, since I've come back from America, as you said, Vince, we've discovered that the London Super Comic Con has been moved to the August bank holiday weekend, I think, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And NICE has been cancelled. Jeff Chahill has quoted one of the main reasons for cancelling NICE being the date alteration of London Super Comic Con. And he said that has knocked it back for the NICE, which is normally September, I'm going to say. NICE, is it? I think so. London Super Comic Con has moved to the Design Centre, which you and I know, Dan, don't we? Because we went to the POW there just ago. Which
the
I actually,
Angel.
Yeah, the Angel, yeah, in Upper Street. And I actually really like it as a venue. So I don't know. What do you think of it?
It's one of the issues kind of have with it, Well, it's fine. Like it's right. It's like a 5-10 minute walk down from Angel Tube Station, which is really easy to get to. The venue inside is fine. I kind of have other issues with thinking. I've got no problem with it being there, but like on a August bank holiday, you're up against some competition, and London's going to be fucking jammed.
Yeah,
I would say like you got Notting Hill Carnival. Shit ton of other stuff going on. It's a lot more expensive around there generally. I mean, if you're looking to stay over, you're probably going to have to like stay. I'd recommend stay quite a few stations away and travel in, as opposed to get a place around there, because you're going to be paying out the arsehole, as it were. But yeah, like this, it's going to be tough.
It'd be interesting to see because there's a Holiday Inn attached to it, isn't there? Interesting to see what the price of the Holiday Inn is for that weekend.
I would have thought it's going to be expensive anyway if it's a bank holiday
already.
Weekend.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's not booked up straight away. It's a year away, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. So, what I mean, take away the NICE factor, and what do you think was their idea of changing, firstly, the venue, and secondly, the date?
Now, I think, personally, I'm going to say, we felt that it slowed down on quite a few moments at the XL this year, didn't we?
Yeah.
I think footfall was definitely down. I've been to all of them so far, London Super Comic Cons, and I think the footfall was definitely down.
But wasn't they had that the Walker Stalker Con, whatever it was, at the same weekend, and they had like all the stars of the show, Charlie Adlard there, basically in direct competition. And I think the overall arc thing is that these, as what's happened with Nice, when they're going up against each other, everyone's a loser. I think like the conventions lose out, the fans lose out because they're kind of not getting one and they're not getting the other. Yeah. See what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and also creators are losing out as well because, like, you know,
they have to
pick and choose. And, you know, if they like two events the same and then they pick one and that event doesn't do so well, there's always going to be that, what if I pick the other one?
Yeah. But that's not to be down on London Super Comic Con last year. I think we all thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Yeah, we had a great time. Yeah, yeah, we really did. I think it was quieter though, but I think that might have been because they didn't have. I mean, the first year they had Stan Lee, didn't they? Then they had Roy Thomas, and they didn't have like a really. And then the third year they had that big Sienkiewicz and Mazzucchelli, and the big sort of Daredevil thing. But this year it didn't feel as if it was there was a big event attached to it, really. I think maybe that. I think personally, if I hear conventions at XL, I find it a pain in the ass to go out there.
Okay.
I think even someone who comes in and goes out of London every day, I think the XL is a little bit out on a limb.
I've got to do London Bridge and like DLR, and DLR's a bit of a pain.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I much prefer the Design Centre. I love it as a little venue. Plus, is you can go places from there. You can walk 5 minutes and you're in a, you know, a pub, any kind of restaurant you want, you know, Upper Street's got a vibrant area.
I know. Brilliant. Also with this,
kind of trapped in there.
Yeah, with this venue, is they're having a dedicated sort of artist alley sort of room, aren't they? They're going to have the,
so I hear, yeah,
yeah, which you'd hope if that sort of thing is going to be there, it's going to be signposted well.
Yeah,
well, I think they were kind of alluding to the fact that they were going to do something big the year after.
Okay.
London Super Comic Con, they had something massive planned, and the reason they'd shifted it to this was to accommodate whatever that was, but we can only speculate at what that was at this point.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what that is. So.
Oh, by the way, folks, when we talk about all this, it's purely going to be our own opinions and speculation.
Yeah. We don't have any inside knowledge.
Don't have any inside knowledge. We certainly, don't trust my opinion.
Yeah, our thoughts and opinions are not representative of the Awesome Comic Podcast.
See, Dan Butcher is also our lawyer.
That is also made up.
Yeah.
Like a Harry Mudd moment. Isn't it also the same weekend as Melksham?
Yeah, Melksham normally takes place on the August bank holiday. Or it certainly did this year. There's a bit of a distance away, how much...
You can't compare it, can you?
Yeah. Well,
I like Melksham, but I found Melksham quiet this year. I was as likely to be speaking to a creator as I was to a member of the public, I think, at Melksham.
Okay.
Melksham, I mean, for me personally, it was certainly quieter on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely quieter. I mean, the atmosphere was good. And I know there were a lot of creators that came from further afield this year at Melksham.
Right.
And some of them, they did quite well, so that was quite good. And it's a great show, great atmosphere, but it was, with a lot of conventions, it seems to be getting quieter. Those that aren't the big events or, you know, the big sort of numbers through the door.
Yeah.
I think conventions are getting quieter in terms of either footfall or certainly people, like, spending.
Yeah.
I know some people have, you know, you have some gangbuster days. You know, people do well at certain conventions, but obviously with the price, you know, the quality of the pound at the moment, people are sort of they're a bit more reticent to spend, I would say. I think that sometimes comes into it. So I think there's definitely a pullback on spending at shows.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful that certain smaller shows don't become creator get-togethers.
Yeah,
I've heard a couple of stories about the Lakes, which is we talk has just finished today, where it seemed to be more of a get together for creators and small press and indie. then it seems to be a show for people who love comics.
Mm.
Right. That, so I can't speak with authority with that, but I've heard that from two people today, which is a shame. And I get the feeling around a few things like that occasionally.
Yeah.
And I think we need to, obviously, if we're going to survive, we need to attract people.
Yeah.
John Late wrote in, we've had an awful lot of interaction around this question. I know Vince put it out on Twitter and we put it out on the Facebook as well. And we'll mention a few names as we go along, and thanks for people to write in. But John Late, who's always, as a measured and considered opinion around stuff, said, are we reaching a tipping point? Is this going to be a saturation point for conventions? And it's something I know we've talked about before, haven't we?
Yeah.
And this, just purely putting a comic convention in that bank holiday weekend, it's such a huge comic convention, is certainly a clash for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I know Sarah Harris wrote in, and she said it's a clash because she would normally go to, I think it's the Reading Festival that weekend.
Yep, it's Reading Festival.
And as you said, it's the Carnival as well. Both huge events for, people, of our ilk. You know, we don't just enjoy comics, we enjoy music and stuff as well.
Mm.
You know, it might become a problem. What do you guys think about that?
Definitely. I mean, if you're kind of concerned about footfall and money being spent, etc., and you're kind of going head-to-head against massive events that arguably have got a lot more pull than the London Super Comic Con, surely that's got to be a concern. Maybe it won't affect it whatsoever in the bank holiday weekend, or do make it even more kind of accessible. I mean, because on Excel, who can kind of just walk into the Excel? Oh, I'm just passing by the Excel. There's nothing to the Comic Con.
You're
with the Business Design Center. If you had people marching them down the street in cosplay, as he invariably will, surely that will draw in crowds.
Yep. Who are not just there, just that in this sort of warehouse in the middle of the East End.
Exactly.
That you normally go to otherwise. They're in a sort of vibrant, and quite an arty area, Islington. A bit like LCAF. LCAF, is held in the sort of, the sort of trendy East End. People will come in who, comics sound interesting. But I don't think the XL has that benefit, to be fair.
Not at all, no.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah Harris mentioned also that she, talks about a comic convention that was in a local area. And people were like, well, how did I not know about this?
Yeah.
And kind of complained that they're really into that stuff, but didn't know. And complaining the organisers didn't advertise properly. There's only so much you can do.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I think it is hard work, and you've got to say that the people putting on these shows, especially the smaller shows, they've got an awful lot to do, an awful lot to put up with, and just promoting this show, for instance, constantly shouting the word out.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm going stir crazy.
And apologising.
Yeah.
I kind of have a feeling with this when I'm promoting the webcomic stuff. It feels like you're kind of going uphill on a trike, and the moment you stop promoting yourself is when you start slipping back.
Yeah.
And you have the negative consequence of not going forward anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's constantly you've got to be like a kind of shark and keep swimming forwards, otherwise you die.
I mean, with that in mind, though, I think... And some conventions, they certainly, some of them have an active presence on Facebook, for instance. I've seen Facebook pages that are quite active and they're constantly announcing things, but they won't necessarily have a Twitter account as well. Mm. I think it benefits people to have three things. I mean, this is just my opinion. A decent Facebook one with regular updates, similar with your Twitter, and a decent website so that people... know about tickets, know the latest news. That doesn't mean you have to update the news every 5 minutes, of course.
No.
But certainly on some websites you go on there and you're not quite sure what's going on with an event.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we've looked at a couple recently where we thought it was still last year's guest list up.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. There's been a couple of occurrences like that when I've been doing them, the events section that we used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you need to spread the word beyond that. I think, I know Melksham does, local newspapers.
Definitely,
and gets on, local radio. And I think you need to do that as well,
Yeah. I mean, certainly, if you're a smaller sort of local event, it befits you to try and get the whole community involved if you can. Mm. That's easier said than done, of course. But I think Melksham and, similar shows like that, they do a great... Like, Leamington, I think, does a lot of that as well, don't they, I think?
Yeah, Leamington are good for it, yeah.
Dan...
Go on, mate. Sorry.
No, you carry on.
I was going to say, Dan wrote in, actually, from Leamington, who's a friend, Dan Mailer, and he was saying that He laid some maths on us, which I thought was pretty interesting, which is something we haven't really heard before.
Mm.
And what he's saying for if you've got a 100-table event, which a lot of these smaller conventions tend to be around that number, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You need 4,000 people through the door to make sure the exhibitors have a fair crack at making some money.
Fucking hell.
A big shout, isn't it?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
That's getting a lot of people in the door.
Yeah.
I never really thought of it like that, but yeah, that is a lot of people per table.
So was that 100, did you say?
For a 100-table event, yeah.
So how many tables are you usually at Melksham?
Probably a little less than that, I'd say.
Yeah.
Because there's a time
there's smaller events. I'm not sure if they're 100 tables. It's same as Leamington. Oh, do you know what? My memory's shot.
Because that means like a lot of fucking punters have got to come through that door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many people must they have to get into London Super Comic Con and, you know, this sort of thing just to make numbers?
The flip side of it is to kind of make it the door price cheaper to get more people in. I would like to see that, but obviously that's
help. Yeah, exactly. I'd like to see the same because a lot of these conventions you're paying to go in and then spend more money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm paying to go into a shop.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
But you need other stuff,
don't you? You need panels. You know, who was it? Somebody wrote in with a sort of little bit of a mathematical. Alan Henderson, wasn't it, wrote in. He said he had a really interesting email, actually, although he did describe it as a ramble, which it wasn't, Alan. And he says you almost need a graphic equaliser. You need mainstream artists, sales tables, small press, talks and discussions, and social interaction. And yes, he includes cosplay, and I think we all know that is now, you know, there has to be that these days. And if you score it, and then, you'll get an average, and you'll see how well you're doing. That's not a bad way of looking at it that way.
Yeah.
Because like you say, you can't just have a... I mean, it's not like it's a country hall where you come in and you buy stuff and you've got to pay to get in to buy it. Yeah. You know, you need something to benefit you. You know, kids face painting events and, you know, panels and, you know, oh, look, there's that mainstream artist from a Marvel book, you know, something like that. You need that as well, I think.
And sort of trade sellers as well. Do you know what I mean? People selling, like, whether it be comics or, like, you know, personalized sort of merchandise or things like that. You know, because
what if you had like a kind of door price that was virtually nothing for the person who wants to go in and then kind of look around a couple of times, then come back out, and then a slightly higher price for a person who'd want to go to
like a weekend pass?
Yeah, a weekend pass, and that'd include the talks, blah 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 blah. Because certainly you'd have like obviously it wouldn't be like on the Super Comic Con where no one kind of accidentally walks past the Excel, but like especially like Melksham when you get people off the street who would just stick their head in. But if you got like the couple and two kids, and it's like a fiver on the door each.
Yeah.
That's like 20 quid, and that's like, oh, fucking hell. That can be a fair bit of money for people.
I was talking to a friend of ours who's a con organizer. I probably shouldn't say his name. And he was saying it's very difficult to get back issue and comics retailers in and make them pay a table charge. He says they're notoriously tight, essentially, is what he was saying. And they'll wait you out until you offer it to them for free.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
I presume the margins are very tight for those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when you're flogging... Like, we went to a stand at London Simcom, where it's like a quid a comic.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're not making fucking tons of money in this, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I think there is a tipping point soon, isn't it? I think we may have reached it, you know, where you've got location and type of conventions clashing. I know that Nottingham is up against MCM Manchester, I think, this year.
Really?
Certainly was last year. And that's obviously a problem. That's something needs considering. It's something needs addressing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, is there a weekend this year where there hasn't been some form of convention calling itself a comic or not, you know, somewhere in the country? I'm going to probably say there's not been, has there?
I've seen a lot less of those ones that are just kind of signature events dressed up as Comic Cons.
Yeah.
A lot of them have kind of changed their name, or at least kind of, made it slightly different so they're not saying we're a Comic Con.
Yeah. Gary Watson made me laugh because he said as soon as the message came out, because I know people were throwing themselves off low car parks and stuff like that when they heard about this. he described it as disturbance in the force. You know, it's like, oh my god, what's happening? Let's all start self-harming. It's only a comic convention, to be fair. You know, calm down. But
yeah.
At the end of the day, we live in a world where there's lots of these events. If this sort of thing was like that when I was a kid, I probably would have been I would have been over the moon. But then again, you grow up, you become bitter, you start paying taxes, you get fed up with the world, you know, you start drinking heavily, and then you just think, you're just sitting in a dark room just thinking, why, Vince? Why did you do this?
Yeah, why did you come on this? Why did you start this podcast?
But like someone said, the cancellation of fucking Nice is like a bit of a cynical move, and I was like, I can't see how anyone can hold that opinion. How is it cynical? I mean, you're kind of hedging your bet, surely. So the organisers of Nice have just said, right, okay, we're going to go up against this giant, and they're going to be competing for exactly the same people I am. Maybe this year we'll kind of not do it.
Like, yeah, and Unsony's thinking about coming back next year. There's still the consideration, you know, the following year, 2018, they're still thinking of coming back for that one. Mm-hmm.
Maybe
whether we will or not,
back,
I don't know.
Reconsider.
Yeah.
And then, like, we'll go at it again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking a break from Thought Bubble this year. It turned out to be for work reasons, but I was considering it anyway. Because I think going to a convention, other than obviously other than New York, because I don't care about that one, but you sometimes just need to think, oh, I've done that one. A lot of these conventions have the same guests. They have the same people selling often the same small press books. You know, I'll take a break for a year. And maybe that should be the opinion of a lot of conventions, where they think, all right, let's take a break for a year, come back.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I know personally, next year I'm going to do hardly any conventions. I'm just going to I'm just going to concentrate on output. Get a lot of work on the go rather than thinking about conventions and stuff. Just takes the pressure off some of the creating, and like then when I come back, I'll have a bit more to show. Do you know what I mean? Because also when you're behind a table and you have the same thing for a certain number of shows, surely, you know, that gets a bit exhausting.
Yeah.
Well, because at some point someone says, well, that chap's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Because he always does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, maybe not go and see him.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for only doing a convention when you've got a new book out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really, I suppose. You know, I've done it where I've turned up with the same old book at the same old convention.
Yeah.
You know, but I think having that release of your new book. But then again, sometimes on these conventions only give you a table if you're a returning exhibitor.
Yeah.
You
get a table in the first place.
You get in the door early sometimes. You're already on like a sort of email list if you've already booked a table. Which makes sense, I guess. You know, you don't have to take up the tables, but, you know.
Yeah.
It makes sense that they offer.
Well, surely it makes sense for a small press kind of creator to constantly rotate the conventions they're going for each year, as opposed to if you do the same one every year, and presumably the same, not all the same audience, but the same amount of people going through the doors.
Mm.
And if you're changing it every time, that you're kind of mixing up, and the new pair of eyes is getting to see your stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, there's only so many times you can, as a punter, certainly, there's only so many times you can circle those aisles, isn't there?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to go to a lot of conventions and not know people at them, you know. And I'd, you know, certainly in the early days of Bristol or UCAC, I'd go along and just sort of circle round and not really know anyone and then leave, you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think the point kind of with the conventions is going to get to the point where it's going to be a survival of the fittest kind of thing? Well, essentially those with the most money are going to be able to kind of
now, isn't it?
Weather the storm. Yeah, and the smaller guys are just going to get swallowed up.
Yeah.
But would you say, is there enough for a convention that you could just have, right, we're going to be a small press convention, there's not going to be any of this selling, like, not going to have any merchandise in the stalls? Would you be able to do the numbers?
CCAF does that. Crouch End. Mm. That's all they do.
Yeah.
I don't know what their numbers are like. I don't know. It never seems to be, like, full or anything. But then again, I think they get a venue cheaply.
Yeah.
And they just put some small press tables out.
Yeah,
sure. SJ Webster wrote in a bit. He wrote quite a long email to us about that, and he says he's going to try and just head to the sort of smaller, truer, he calls them, truer Comic Cons.
Hmm.
I suppose something like that is. But you know, when are we going to see a convention and not see a Funko? You know, it's rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. Yeah. So, what do you think the future is like for the smaller press conventions compared to these big MCMs?
Interesting. I think
because MCMs aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
No. In fact, they're growing. I'm surprised there isn't an MCM Croydon, an MCM Bromley. You know, I'm surprised that every town in the country doesn't have an MCM at this point.
Yeah.
I think I think it very much is horses for courses. I think a small press convention like LCAF, you know, run by a small indie company, was the busiest one I've seen so far this year.
Yeah.
It was just rammed out. I think you got to find your niche and just aim for it.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
I would. It's easy for me to say I don't run a convention, but don't try and take on MCM at what they do well with your smaller convention.
Yeah.
I mean,
because I don't think you can succeed.
And also, I'm going to be opinionated now. Prepare yourself.
Go for it.
The mass audience outside our bubble, all you listeners out there are lovely people. You're part of it. We're part of it. But the MCMs cater a lot to outside of this bubble. And so they're getting these guests that we've talked about on this show before. You know, people get irate about them. I certainly just think, well, that's a bit silly. Some of the guests that they're getting on are a bit silly. I don't care if you've got a YouTube channel with 1.2 million subscribers and you're a vlogger, which is a word that I cannot stand. But as a comic fan, I don't really have... If that's going to bring people through the door, that's fine. I think it will only be a matter of time. I think this might happen... the MCM will take Comic Con off their name and it will just be MCM London, MCM Nottingham, MCM whatever.
Yeah.
Because I think as an event, it's moving away from the comics.
Agreed.
I think it is becoming a multimedia show, which is fine. I have no problem with them getting those guests. I mean, I don't go to the MCMs, so it doesn't bother me. You know, if I think about it logically, I can have my fan rage and just go, well, why are they getting them? They're not comic guests. But at the end of the day, I don't go there, so it doesn't matter. You know, they're not appealing to me. But I think they're going to leave the comic... When the comic scene probably loses a little bit of its sheen over the next few years, or it won't be so hip, you'll see the Comic-Con name fall away from the MCM and it will just be MCM.
I think while the films and the TV shows are still killing it, they will still keep the kind of the connection there.
Yeah.
Maybe when that falls away. Mm. I say when, that's fucking... How long have we been riding the old superhero fucking surf wave?
What was X-Men 1? That was like 2000, and even Blade was in before that, wasn't it? Yeah. So,
but the boom, I think the boom came, the true boom. I would say it started with Iron Man, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah,
that's when the atomic bomb dropped, and all of a sudden, you know, it was like these big Hollywood stars. You know, Hollywood started.
I mean, it'll go the way of westerns. I mean, westerns were really popular for 20 years, and then they backed away a bit, didn't they?
Yeah,
you know, and I can see there's no way you can keep the momentum that it's got going now forever. You know, we all know that, we're not stupid, but I think, you know, it's like we'll come at some point.
Yeah,
and then it'll be back to blokes like me at comic marts buying back issues of Elementals, you know. It'll be eventually we'll go back to that, but
the good old days. I mean,
yeah, the good old days, we like to call the good old days. Yeah But I mean, Gareth Hopkins, he puts it right for me, and I agree with him. We're lucky at the moment, we're lucky to have loads of conventions.
Yeah
You know, Mike Zeck, like we did, you know, like we had that fan moment with Mike Zeck, didn't we? Yeah, you can meet them, so we should stay positive about it. But I do think, you know, we've maybe reached the peak of the mountain now, and we're starting heading down the hill again. You know, there's a little bit of a chance of that, I think.
Yeah. And I think small press and indie creators really have to think long and hard about the shows that they decide to go for.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, I think a lot of creators, they book a lot of shows, and, you know, as the downturn happens, you're just going to get more and more disappointed, and then you're going to become disillusioned, and then you're going to just think, why do I bother? Because that naturally happens. If you have a bad show, you're gonna walk away upset, and you know. So just, you know, truly think about what you're gonna do and what you want to achieve about it. Because when I started doing conventions, I was just happy to be there, you know. So I didn't care, you know. If five people bought my book, I was happy. But the longer you do it, the more you're aware of the expense that goes into it, and it becomes a thing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in the world who their hobby is doing conventions.
Yeah.
You know, not their hobby is not making a comic book and selling it. Their hobby is having a table at conventions and socialising with people, I think.
Mm.
You know? I mean, I had a table at Bristol in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I could count on one hand the amount of people who are still doing small press tables at conventions now. And probably, you know, maybe a couple of people who are still at it and still going. regularly. And, you know, it's such a big social thing now, small press at conventions. You know, yet we all know a lot of these people are going to fall away.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get, oh, I didn't sell 40 at this one, I only sold 20, and then they'll fall away, you know.
Yeah.
If you spin it like your approach, Vince, where you're looking at it, this is a creative endeavor.
Yeah,
I'm not knocking anyone who does this as a business and wants to make money out of it. I mean, fair play to you. It's what you want to do. I approach it very much like you do, Vince, in regard to your new approach, as in it's kind of like an artistic thing, and you're doing your thing and trying to get it out there to people, and try not to focus too much on the money. But it's always a kind of constant worry. You're going to kind of get shafted and end up with tons of fucking unsold comics and stuff. Because you want them to be read and given away.
And also, you want it's an interesting one, because the bigger shows are the ones you want to be at, but the bigger shows are the pricier tables. They're the travel. They're the hotel. So when you think about that, then you've got to think about how much you have to sell in order to make all of that worth it.
I think you've got to break down what the problem with Nice and London Super Comic Con is, to me, is they, in size, they're much different, but in approach, they're very similar. So London Super Comic Con invites international and especially American guests over, and you get to meet them. But that's what Nice does as well.
Yeah.
Nice is playing for these names to come over, and you are paying yourself a high price on the door to get in.
Yeah.
So Jeff does court these people from the States and stuff, but which is exactly what London Super Comic Con are doing as well. So they're not so much different, where he thinks, oh, no, the poor little man, the poor little guy has been knocked off his, you know, his date. Well, Jeff charges a lot to get into that convention. Yeah. I've mentioned it in the past. It's an expensive one to get into. It's quite small, and you're paying to see named guests. I mean, there's very little else there. There's very little small press. It's a little bit. There's very little small press, and there's a couple of back issue tables. But the majority of it is people sketching and people legging it to the table to queue up to get a commission.
I said, you're kind of, he's going up against a big gun, as it were. So when kind of like they just got a lot, I presume, a lot more resources and people to throw at this.
Yeah.
So kind of competing with them is, I would think twice.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to all but one of the Nice, even when it was in Northampton. And I have to say, two of the years, I did feel a little bit ripped off. One of them was in a tent that took me about 2 minutes to walk around. But how much is 15 quid to get in.
Okay.
And the other one, I got there at lunchtime on a Sunday, and everyone had gone to the pub. But I paid a fairly hefty price to get in, and all the creators are in this upstairs area had all gone to the pub, and we couldn't find them.
A bit disappointing.
Yeah. So I think there's all different conventions in this country, but I think there's a couple where people are using it to get big names over. You know, they get quite a few war books signed out of it. Let's not be wrong about this. So essentially London Super Comic Con is a big version of Nice to me. You know, it's not, Nice isn't particularly small press friendly, and that's why it's a problem for Jeff, I think.
I guess one thing people, small press creators would have to consider when thinking about going for London Super Comic Con this year is it was a known quantity where you'd roughly be in the Excel Center. Whereas when you go to the Business Design Centre, you've kind of no idea where you're going to be slotted.
Yeah, it was like the tram shed at Bristol, you know, whether it was the one next to the train station. That was the same. We used to go there year after year, and you almost got the hump if you didn't get the same table back again.
Right, okay.
You know, there's a little bit of that going on, I think.
So if I can remember, kind of Business Design Centre, like you've got the massive main atrium, and then there's kind of bits leading off of it.
You got the balcony upstairs as well. Yeah.
If you're up against the balcony, if there's more press creators right there.
Throw themselves off the balcony. But I loved Kapow. I really enjoyed it. I have to say, I really like it. I like the venue. I like the fact that everyone sort of dwelled. I mean, I had a chat with Des Skin standing outside, and, you know, there's quite a good food area upstairs. Mm. And that's where I first got chatting to Christian Wagus, was at that, you know, and I got to see his early sort of porcelain stuff. I really had fun at those. I think it's a good idea. I think it's a great idea. I think it'll only be good for comics. I want that feel of a central London convention again.
Yeah.
Like we had with the comic marts, you know, of the 80s and 90s. Really. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on these events going forward.
Yeah, definitely.
I think certainly London Super Comic Con certainly kicked up some dust. But and it's just in their hands to just do a brilliant show now, which at the end of the day is what we all want, don't we? No matter what time it happens in the year, whether you go, you know, if you go to this event, whether it's behind the table or walking around shopping things, you want the best comic event. You want to be able to sort of say, "God, London Super Comic Con, that was the best con I went to this year."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and if they do that next year, then they can drop the mic and just be like, "Well, that, you know,
exactly."
Yeah,
I want the feeling that I had at New York this year, and I was chatting to Brian Vander about it, and he had exactly the same thing. I want to go there. I want to, you know, have that sort of fall back in love with comics. I want to be enthused about making and reading and, you know, collecting art and seeing comics and, you know, the whole thing. And that's what a comic convention should be, you know. It shouldn't be a load of snooty people who, you know, won't make eye contact with you and go and sit in the pub for half the time. You know, that's what it should be. And that's what I'm hoping it is. Certainly what I came away from London this year. You know, we had an absolute blast, didn't we?
Fantastic.
How many people did we talk to about their projects? We met people we've loved for, you know, their work for years at that thing. And we came away enthused no end. And I've never had a bad experience at London Super Comic Con. I'm only pleased it's moved into a central London location and it gets a, you know, more of an arty name for it, which I think it deserves.
This year was the first time I ever went, and it was an amazing time because I got to spend time with Dan and Tony.
Oh.
You don't mean me, do you? You just mean Dan.
He's talking about Stan.
You did spend time with Stan. That was he did enjoy that. He misses you still. Very good. And we love all forms of comics, don't we? You know, I think we need to mix it up a bit. I think New York, I saw that. I went to the small press area at New York, and there's no like, but I'm more a sort of Drawn and Quarterly man and you're a more a sort of Marvel Comics man. You know, that's none of that distinction. What utter rubbish. Let's just get on and make comics. I was chatting to someone from quite a big indie company this week, and I was suggesting MCM as a possible way of getting the name out about one of their books. And they, I don't think it had occurred to them before. I think they thought, they sort of see MCM as a sort of manga thing. But no, the footfall in MCM, you get your eyes and some product there. It's going to do you some good.
So there you go. Yeah. And now, when we decided to talk about this, I put a poll out, and I asked a very broad question. This was just very broad. There was lots of opinions flying around, so I thought, right, okay, let's do a poll. Let's see how this goes. But as well as the votes that we had, thank you to everyone that voted, there was a lot of replies. So if I may, gents, I'm going to read some of them out and give a good shout. The question was, no matter where you live, because we're not all about the UK here, this is just worldwide, no matter where you live, are you happy with the current state of comic conventions? Quite a broad question, that, isn't it, really?
Yeah, you got a bit of shit for it being too broad as well, didn't you, someone?
I did, but, you know, I don't care. Because the question did exactly what it was supposed to do. It was a starting point, do you know what I mean, for people to talk. And they certainly did. So, first off... And remember, the question is, are you happy with the current state of comic conventions? I'm not going to say that every time. That's the question.
That's fine.
And these are the replies. Englishman in San Diego on Twitter. He says, yes, a comics fan can pick and choose. Events are pretty niche affairs at the Mo, but it's getting there, to be honest. And then he's got three sort of red, sad kind of faces. Kate Ashwin. Kate draws comics, the brilliant Widdershins. She said, yes, she's happy with it, but I've pretty harshly whittled down the list of ones I go to, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Heard a lot of that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are cutting back on the conventions, whether they're visiting or exhibiting at, aren't they? I think a lot of people are culling a little bit.
Yeah.
At M Phoenix UK, he says, I think one per country and a few specialists... was each year, i.e. Ice, TB and Lakes, as well as a few biggies, LSCC and MCM. I don't know if I've read that right, but either way.
Yeah, so he's saying like you need to sort of geographically split them up and just have one per county. I think that's what he's saying.
Country, didn't I?
Yeah, he does a great comic actually, Gods of Men.
Yes.
He's a good lad, actually. Yeah, really good interactor with us and a top bloke. Yeah,
yes, nice he's always supportive. Yeah, and all the people that replied are people that have got in touch with us before. We really appreciate it. So that's why we're giving you a shout out here. At Robin W. Scott, not really happy or engaged by mainstream, but he's falling in love with the small press and indie cons more every day. The medium rules.
Yeah, I had a coffee with Robin at LCAF this year, and he does a great autobiographical comic himself, actually. If you have a look at his Twitter feed, you'll see some of it. Yeah, he's a big proponent of the small press, and rightly so. He's opened my eyes to quite a few creators. Yeah, he's a good lad.
Yeah. Awesome. At Rob No Addy, would love to see more like True Believers and more around me. Thought Bubble is my only local. Otherwise, I have to go to... No, True Believers is my only local. Otherwise, I have to go to Cardiff.
Okay.
I guess that's quite interesting, because there are... Where would you say the main sort of pocket of conventions is in the UK?
Yeah. We have a lot in London.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm going to say... There's a few, aren't there? There's like Cardiff's got a couple, Manchester's got a couple, Leeds's got a couple.
But I think it's certainly more up north as well. Like you're talking Birmingham, Manchester's, you know, Scotland and stuff. But maybe for the southwest, there isn't.
Yeah.
There isn't so much.
I like the way that you call the north Birmingham, Manchester and Scotland. I like the fact that we don't like people who live up beyond the Watford Gap.
I love everyone, Tony. I'm not prejudiced like you horrible human being.
You racist.
But we've mentioned the whole Irish, Scottish kind of comics absolutely going, taking off big time.
Mm. Yeah.
Which they are.
Yeah. Ireland's got a cracking little scene.
Yeah.
Stuart was telling us about that. And in Scotland, certainly, there's quite a few creators we've talked to recently. Alan Henderson's from Scotland, who wrote us in a great reply, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that Glasgow Comic Con sounded like it was fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
It went really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to get up there to a Scottish con. I think it'd be a good crack. At Messy Comics, he hates to vote. He doesn't really care. But he's never been to a real con except SPX. It was great, but he has no base to judge. That's quite interesting, because I guess when we talk about all these things, we talk from our own experiences, like a lot of people have done it, but there's a lot of people who want to go to conventions.
Yeah,
that's the audience you don't think about, isn't it? And there's a lot of people kicking off about a lot of things. But if you're one of those people that has never been to a convention before or never exhibited, what is that like for you? Hearing all of this, reading all of this online.
Yeah, in fact, I was trying to meet Matt in New York, but he never ended up making it this year. But yeah, he's a good lad. And also, little shout out for Matt. He's in. I've had a quick look at the Nottingham comic, which I think all three of us are in, aren't we?
Yeah.
And Matt's also got a page in that, and it looks great. There you go.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I would say if you haven't done the Comic Con as an exhibitor, you should give it a go. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's hard work, but it's a lot of fun.
It is hard work. Very hard work. Anyway, at Anna Landin, she says, Swedish comic creator here. Small press, focused cons equals usually really good. Bigger mainstream cons equals usually kind of meh. And by small press, I mean indie creators, smaller publishers, heavy comics focused cons.
Hmm.
Would you say...
Sounds similar to our sort of problem over here then, in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say the atmosphere at a smaller sort of indie show is... not more enjoyable. I'm trying to think about it. I think with the big shows, because they are about the numbers, do you think some people are more in the sort of sales mindset? You know, if you go to an MCM, if you're sitting at a table in MCM, are you thinking more about sales than you would be?
You are.
I think that affects the overall sort of feeling over a weekend, doesn't
it? The whole fact you feel like you've got to kind of do the performance of come and check out this book and have your fucking elevator pitch ready to sell it. And then if they don't, you kind of feel like that's a bit of a knockback. It's a fucking horrible feeling. I try not to feel that way.
I mean, I know when I was at London Super Comic Con, you know, I was a lot more relaxed because I had you two with me. Do you know what I mean? If I had a table by myself, there probably would have been more pressure on myself to sell more. Do you know what I mean? To do more.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, you just made it wonderful for me, guys. anyway, back to the Twitter. At Implausible17, Sarah Harris getting mentioned once again. She's going to say, overall, she's happy with it. I have specific niggles, but in general, there are plenty of good cons to take my time and cash. That's fair enough.
Yeah, like a nice little bit of positivity from Sarah there. We like that. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you just love the medium and you want to buy comics, there's just tons of places you can go to now.
I'd go to a comic convention every day if I could.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I had the cash and the time, that's what I'd be doing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Right, they keep on coming. At Bevis Musson, I'm sorry if I've announced any of these wrong. Bar Thought Bubble and the Lakes, I've no inclination to go to other cons, especially MCMs, even if they're local.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Shot across the bow.
Yeah.
At Mitigated Text, my answer is both yes and no. Comes from my experiences as exhibitor, press, staff, volunteer, and attendee. It's just the tip of the iceberg. So, quite interesting. At Terry NGP Kane, I would like the ones that are not as in all in caps, comic focused, to stop calling themselves Comic-Con.
Oh, I saw that one, yeah. Yeah, nice little bit of fire from him. Yeah, I like that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something we've talked about on the show. Briefly mentioned it just a few moments ago, actually.
Indeed, yeah.
What would it be like if we didn't have a fucking another DeLorean? I think we're keeping the DeLorean. Well, not keeping them in business because they're weird, aren't they? But, yeah, I think people with DeLoreans are kept in, you know, pocket money by having comic conventions and sounding.
And TARDISes.
Yeah.
One thing I kind of find weird at conventions, and this is something I've not been back to conventions in a long while, is the cosplay stuff where people do mashups of two different things. I just don't get that. I can really appreciate when someone does a really good Judge Dredd or Predator or whatever, when they do like Judge Predator or something.
Judge Punisher, I saw the other day.
I don't get that. It doesn't really work for me. But
I love Judge Predd.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like I'm hating on that, but like, I just think, oh, okay, it's just really weird. I'd rather someone went like the best Judge Dredd they could be, the best Predator they could be, as opposed to kind of a mashup.
Yeah, but, we need more furries, really, don't we?
Dear God. I thought of you actually, Tony, on Netflix now. There's a film called Mascots. Have you heard of this?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
No. Is it Christopher Guest, the guy that did
Spinal Tap and all that?
It's a sort of mockumentary about people who are like sports mascots and stuff like that.
So they're not fucking each other, are they?
And there's a big award show and the organisers are having problems with one bloke dressed as a bunny walking around and trying to fuck everything.
Interesting. Alright, I don't know if this is true because I'm not a cosplayer, do you know what I mean? Although Matt Harrow does accuse me of cosplaying as Rich Johnson on occasion.
Well, that's ridiculous. He should take his Vampirella costume.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But I spoke to one once. I can't name him. And he'd given up reading comics and started doing cosplay. This is a true story, if anyone's asking. It's not me, one of my made-up ones. And I said to him, why have you done that? And he went, well, he says, we all get together in a hotel room. We all put on our costumes. And then afterwards, when we go to take them off, we all have sex with each other. Is that true? Any cosplayers want to write in and let me know if that's true? Because if it is,
I can see the appeal with that.
Yeah. I can see where he's going with that one.
How many people after a comic convention have sex? Bloody hell.
Oh, I don't know. How long after a comic convention? You mean like a month?
Yeah, true. Maybe that's the next poll. Anyway.
Yeah. Have you ever had sex at a comic convention?
Yes.
Right in. And not you, Lamming. We know what the truth is.
Next week is the 69th show. So
It's
our sex show.
That's going to be the poll for next week. Brilliant. Brilliant.
Have you ever had sex at a comic convention? And we will allow anonymous... What?
What, at or after?
At and after. I know Lamming's a big dumb, but do you know what I mean? He's sort of... But right. Dan's got
you could say you've been fucked at a comic convention by some high door prices. Hey.
Yeah. Hey. I've been bent over a number of times with some back issue prices, I've got to tell you.
Oh, dear. Right. Gareth Hopkins got in touch. A few tweets, so I'm just going to read them all in one go, because I think he didn't want to let the 140 characters stop him. He had something to say. So, at GR Think, and we encourage people to follow these people on Twitter, by the way, because they're all great. Yeah, a lot of these people are creators and fans and stuff, and they're all great people.
Yeah.
So he begins. There's obviously loads, too many for one person to go to, either as a creator or as a consumer, but that's sort of a good thing. It means there's more room for new creators to get in somewhere and gives consumers a choice on where they go. Imagine if there was only one or two cons and they were kind of terrible. It'd wipe out the growing small press scene. It wipes out the growing small press scene. God, I'm having trouble with this. Also, lots of cons mean there's space for weirdos like me to slip in with our stuff, as well as more conventional comics. Having said that, I'm aware that small cons are suffering from clashes with big cons, and there's a limited consumer base. But in a couple of years, that'll settle. We're in a state of rapid change right now. Stay positive, and it'll work out good. Oh, brings it back.
Look at that.
It keeps, yeah, it keeps the hope alive, does Gareth?
Keeps it real.
And I think he's right.
Yeah.
In most of that. At EdXAbando, my main complaint is the focus on movie and TV show actors over actual comic creators.
Yeah. Yeah. We know that.
There's that story the other week.
Stars, would you? Go on, mate, sorry.
Yeah. Well, they were carrying away bin bags.
Oh, yeah.
Stuffed of money.
They were saying that Daryl from Walking Dead could do $250,000 in a weekend.
Fucking hell. Yeah, I mean, if that was the case and said, right, you've got to spend your weekend in this building signing autographs and interacting with fans for $250,000, who wouldn't fucking do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd jump at it.
Yeah, Dan sent us an article about... we should have to put, have you put that on the Facebook page?
No, I don't think I have.
We should.
I was trying to get out.
Yeah.
If nothing else, we just got to give he's going to ever listen to the show, but a massive shout out to Andrew Lincoln.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy that's probably in one of the biggest shows in the world, and when he does all these signings and he gets his pay, gives it to charity, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and I'll tell you who else does that. Shatner does it as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I got to spend some time with him at a convention looking after him a few years ago, and he did it. He did exactly the same thing. Yeah. And I thought, wow, good on you. Do you know what I mean? These people have got enough money, haven't they?
Yeah.
All these people who queue up and, you know, they love this person who's been in, some fucking shit thing about vampires or something. And they spend all this money. You know, they're spending £60 to get a photograph with them, and that's the £60 all they've got that month to spend. Mm. And these creators are spending 2 seconds with them and just putting it in their pocket, or the convention organisers are.
Many comics you could get for that £60.
I know. Yeah.
I feel like they're two separate audiences, and they wouldn't cross.
Yeah. I think I paid £50 to get into the Star Trek one a couple of years ago, and that was just a money making machine. There was nowhere in there you could go where you didn't have to spend money.
That's fucked.
Yeah. I know, absolute fucking money making greed. It's just greed. Do you know what I mean, for these people?
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. We're last few at WP Comics. They're not really Comic Cons anymore. Just commercial outlets for everything but comics. And there is more. At Fraser C69, Fraser Campbell, previous guest on the show, not too long ago.
Yep.
There's maybe too many and not that many that really focus on comics. But the health of the small press is a big plus. I think that's something that can't go unnoticed. I know there may be problems with conventions, but the small press scene has never been bigger, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and there's lots of people who want to make comics, which is amazing. It's always good.
Yeah.
At James Gibbs Art, the Gibster, I'm finding a lot of them to be cookie cutter generic. Oh, he cuts to the quick, doesn't he? Eh? He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
At Tomboy Princess, Emily Owen. She said,
"Be afraid."
Be afraid. Be very afraid. No, we love you, Emily. Most of the indie locals are great for accepting suggestions, but the branded ones, not so much.
No.
To which True Believers replied, "Okay, True Believers, we're a community event, so love the input of the people who come along. It makes us better and lets us know that people care enough about what we do to engage and get involved in it, which is cool. True Believers might have it's going to have an awesome comics sort of appearance, isn't it? So
you're a guest, and we're coming in on your coattails.
Yeah, you're going to be in my rider.
Tony, I am your Dan. Cat, actually. I'm going to have to pretend to be the cat that sits on your drawing board.
And the last one, at David Wynn, he's got a few here, so I'll just read them out in one go. I think it's complicated. Partly by people not necessarily always saying what they really mean. Like, I wish cons were more focused on just comics. Very often means, I wish there were less cosplayers, etc. A pro friend was recently added to a group on Facebook that purports to be about proper cons that are about comics. But that group doesn't include London Super Comic Con, which is a massive convention that literally only about comics. So it's not clear what people really mean when they talk about this stuff, you know?
Yep.
So
I mean, nothing is, as we talked about politics a minute ago, nothing is simple and nothing can be solved in 140 characters.
No.
You know, there's problems in all sorts of ways, and there's positives in, much more positives in all sorts of ways as well. You know, we're not going to solve it by saying, oh yeah, less film stars, or oh yeah, more cosplayers. You're not going to solve it that way, are we? Mm. You know?
No.
I mean, I think if these events had loads of, I mean, no matter what I say about it, if it had vloggers and TV show stars and whatever, and people were walking out with tons and bags of comics as well, no one would be really saying anything, would they? I think, you know, so who knows? But the poll...
Here we go.
The results are in. We had 117 votes.
That's good.
Which I was quite surprised at. I was quite pleased.
Yeah.
Now, the answers were yes, no, and don't really care.
I wonder which one I typed into.
Are you happy with the current state of comic conventions? 20% said they don't really care.
Oh, okay.
30% said yes, and 50% of the people that voted said no, they're not happy with the current state of comic conventions.
Interesting. Yeah. We do love a moan in the UK.
Oh, hell yeah.
But that is still quite high. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was quite interesting, actually. You know, is that a sort of an emotional vote at the moment? Because we asked the question at a certain time.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
But then again, I think some people have been a bit dissatisfied.
Yeah.
With conventions anyway.
Yeah. I think if your convention is just about making you a few quid in your pocket, I mean, Kev, we always quote Kev Brett Nottingham as our example of a guy who does it for all the right reasons. He's running a comic convention because he loves comics, and he's running it for a charity. You know, if you're doing it just to line your pocket, like, let's not mention any by name, but we all know the ones, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons, aren't you?
Yeah.
Completely.
I think that will come through as well in your convention.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
People will be able to read that through it.
Yeah.
And that will spread word of mouth, etc.
Yeah. And you've got to admire these people who put their head... I mean, we're moaning and we're pleased, 50% pleased, 50% moaning about stuff. But, you know, these people, they put their head above, you know, like Jeff, I had a bit of a dig at him a minute ago, but he's put his head up there. He's organised a comic convention. And he's got, you know, big names over from America. And
fair
people
have
come and met them. So he's doing a better job than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are problems. And I think there are, I don't think anyone will ever deny that at the moment there's too many.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that's maybe the biggest problem. There's only so much cash to go around.
Yeah. I think, 2017 is going to be a very interesting year for comic conventions.
Yeah.
Certainly the economy worldwide is going to be probably in interesting places. So I doubt the spending money. No one's going to be cash rich everywhere.
Yeah, definitely.
So how is that going to affect shows?
That's going to affect us comic prices, hasn't it? American comic prices when you're importing stuff, it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah,
that is actually, it's quite interesting you say that, Dan, because we had an email from Rick Jackson about that, which I think is going to be one of the discussions coming up soon, actually.
Okay.
I would have read the email out this week, but I knew the convention talk was going to go far and wide. So,
yeah.
Rick, thank you very much, but we... And it is coming. I'm going to tell the guys about it once we finish.
We have got a subject for next week as well, haven't we? Yeah. Which we're going to talk about in a minute, which we're quite interested in.
I've got a fucking check from Comixology, and I've waited until the dollar price goes up a bit.
Oh, dear. But
I'm going to get a can of Coke out of it. I was sick of a cash.
Cool.
So at the end of the day, the state of modern comic conventions, where do you think we stand? It's Gladiator, it's come to the end of the fight, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to consolidate. I think some will drop away, as we've seen.
Yeah.
And others will find their audience and run with it a bit longer.
Yeah,
and some will. I think the small press scene is going to falter a tiny bit. I think it's going to reduce. I think people are going to realise they're not selling as much at conventions.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to start, I'd like to think that people are going to start buying back issues. I mean, if you went to the Comic Mart, which was today, you'd have been able to buy a rucksack full of comics for a tenner.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of comics out there.
We came on air, we was talking about legacy heroes,
yeah,
and some of the old Marvel stuff of like characters, the mantle being passed on. And you could pick that up for fucking so cheap. And there's some of those stories are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. There's, comics are older than, you know, 2005.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, people need to look back. And there's some great comics there. You know, I bought an absolute shitload of black and white Marvel and heavy metals and, you know, magazines at New York for like $20.
I will, absolutely brilliant stuff. I will probably say this, though. I think the amount of people that are buying back issues, certainly in the modern market, is far less than it used to be. I don't
definitely.
I think it's only going to keep dropping.
When do you ever hear anyone these days refer to them as a comic collector?
Yeah,
that used to be what we called ourselves.
Yeah,
you know, we used to be comic collectors, and we, you know, we'd index them and we'd work out what issues we needed. People just aren't like that anymore.
Yeah. People are about the new. A lot less people when are like that. I think some of the best quality stuff, and certainly the most fun stuff, comes from the old. I'm not talking, you know, this is not necessarily, I'm not talking about like Bronze Age comics necessarily, but, you know, just look to the comics in your back issue bins.
Would you say that's more indicative of a society that's more throwaway?
Yeah, I think generally. Short memories, definitely. I think I saw recently where someone was commenting on about, isn't it great that we've got Luke Cage, the first black character to lead a Marvel TV or movie? And I thought, how old are these people? Do they not remember Blade? Three movies.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, booted the Marvel Universe back into the movies.
Yeah.
Because from what I was remember reading or watching about Blade, they were really kind of just, they weren't too sure about it. And Marvel, it's not got the big mouthful brand splashed all over that film at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, they were kind of a bit taken aback when it did so well.
Yeah.
But Blade is also a character that they could take in this world where if they did a massive superhero film and it didn't do very well, that would probably be it was at a time where it would probably be a massive disaster for Marvel. Whereas they could take a Blade character, take a punt on it, and also the people behind it have a bit more creative freedom.
Yeah.
So then they can create something, and if it's a success, it's a win-win, really, because then if it doesn't do that well, you haven't lost anything.
Yeah, and it was a TV. People forget it was a TV series, a failed TV series as well.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I think I would have liked to have seen the Edgar Wright Ant-Man film.
Yeah, I think so.
Travel to an alternate dimension. But I don't want to see the... I'm really, really looking forward to Doctor Strange, and I've got tickets for the Friday night when it comes out.
Oh, come on.
I'm concerned that the Marvel films are becoming too formulaic, and I don't want them to be.
They're becoming a narrative of their own, so they're becoming a series.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, but, you know, I can see where people will fall away because of that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, my personal opinion on Doctor Strange, I'm hugely looking forward to it, and I think some of these superhero films could possibly fall into a trap of being a bit samey. I know some of the criticisms of Ant-Man were levelled at it, you know, being similar to sort of Iron Man in it, you know, in the way it was structured and stuff. But Doctor Strange, just from the trailers, you're going to watch something that you've never seen put on screen before.
Yeah.
And
I can't wait for Iron Fist as well. I absolutely cannot wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can't talk about Luke Cage because everyone will turn their iPods off. People still have iPods? I don't know, whatever they call
it. I literally can't talk about it because I haven't seen it.
All right. Okay. Well, I finished it last night. You finished it a couple of days ago, didn't you, Vince?
Yes, I did. Yeah. But we'll leave that for a good time, and then we'll, I think, probably...
But as an important answer to what you were saying there, Dan... is there is loads of absolutely brilliant Luke Cage comics, you know, from the 70s onwards. People would really enjoy it. I mean, the Sanford Green drawn one is absolutely brilliant. I read the first trade of it the other day, but they can go back and read some George Tusker and John Byrne and Kerry Gamble and all these great artists who wrote on, you know, drew it. There's some great Luke Cage comics back there. You know?
Would you say these characters that are around nowadays is because they've had such good comics and good stories for them to obtain such heights as they've got now? So going back and visiting what made them great is just an absolute joy. It's a buried treasure to be discovered.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I was looking at The Essential today for Luke Cage, Power Man. Brilliant stuff. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
You know what else is brilliant? the fact that people got in touch and made this episode such a
joy. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, yeah. So, our new little direction, and people, we've had some really positive replies to that. Last podcast, haven't we?
Yeah. So it's probably because it was a shorter one.
Yeah.
Well, people seem to react really well to the fact that they liked the three of us engaging.
Yeah.
And talking to each other as opposed to.
We are all engaged. You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for getting in touch with your views, your opinions. As always, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's a broad question. It's an ongoing discussion, one that we're going to keep our eye on going forward. And who knows what other news will pop up, you know. When it does, we'll talk about it.
I say personally, I wouldn't like it to become the age-old thing, which more likely it will. It's just that the money wins out, and it'll be the, you know, the kind of the big events who are charging lots of money and stuff. They end up kind of coming out head and shoulders amongst the smaller things. But I don't know.
Mm.
That's massively cynical of me there and bringing a downer on it. But you know the way these things usually plan out.
Yeah. And let's bring the mood back up again, Dan, shall we?
Yes.
Because there's another big event that I need to talk about, and that is Action Dan.
Hey!
Oh, yes. Music, as if there's going to be music. Maybe next week, I can't be bothered.
I want the Rambo theme playing behind this. Music bed.
Or the end credits of Commando. Amazing.
Yeah.
I love that song. Anyway, now Action Dan. Now, we love 80s action films on this show, as well as comics. And hopefully you
people
like... They come
in a close second behind comics.
Oh, yes. Dan has laid the gauntlet down because he seems to think he knows everything about 80s action films.
I've never made that claim.
Well, you have now.
I heard you say it.
So, hashtag Action Dan. Look for it on Twitter.
That fantastic picture we got.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yes. Brilliant. Yeah.
I think I'll use that as the banner for this.
Yeah.
But basically, what we're going to do each week is we're going to ask Dan Skullmask Butcher, a trivia question about an 80s. We're going to test his 80s action knowledge. Now, we had a few questions asked to us on the Twitter, but unfortunately, Dan Butcher could see all of them, so he's already answered them. So this week, I'm going to kick things off with asking him a bit of trivia question just to get the ball rolling. But if you want to ask Dan an 80s action question, then email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com with the headline Action Dan. Give us the question and the answer, please. That'd be nice because some of the Twitter questions were just the questions. I didn't know what the answer was. But this week, Dan, are you ready? Are you prepared?
Yeah. The first time up. Go for it.
Right. Hopefully, you should be able to answer this one. I've just thought of this question off the top of my head. Now, hopefully, you've seen the film Bloodsport.
I have.
The 1988 film with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yep. The bad guy in that was played by an actor called Bolo Young.
Chong Li.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, he was in another film with Van Damme. What was that film?
Impact.
Oh, he's done it. He's done it. Well, <Hey. laughs>
you're going for the obvious Enter the Dragon question there, but yeah, he's done it. Oh, yeah. Nice one.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You know the geezer who done the fight choreography on Bloodsport? It's a guy called Frank Dukes who allegedly the film was based on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's come to light that it's pretty much all the hoax. He didn't do any of that. The guy, him and Van Damme had a big falling out. Because he said he fought in this underground kumite, and like some reputable martial arts guys tried to kind of look into it.
Kumite.
And they couldn't find any record of it whatsoever. And he's interesting character. Look up that Frank Dukes guy.
So he didn't just sort of like completely. He didn't shin kick a tree over and over.
That's a kickboxer.
Ooh. I just got schooled. I just got schooled, and that's why it's Action Dan. And not Action Vince, you see. But, we started him off with a nice, easy one there. I think he's got a bit confident as well, hasn't he, Tony? You could feel it in his answer.
I'm quite aroused.
I have to ask Tony a trances question.
Well, we've already discussed this. I'm going to be doing the bit for people with personal problems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's more my style. I
Hashtag think. Touched by Tony.
Sex show next. Well,
cat like out touched the bag, by an angel, but I'm not really an angel.
The only agony art article where you feel worse.
Me and a mate wrote into who's that one who does the sun? Who's the agony art in there? I can't remember.
Dan. Is it Miriam?
Is that the one? I can't remember. She said, look, she guarantees a reply to all questions. So we wrote this for a laugh. We wrote one in saying, I really like my mate. He looks a bit like Robbie Williams. I think I might give him a kiss. What do you think? she wrote back saying, only give him a kiss if you're sure he feels the same way. She like wrote back a serious answer.
Brilliant.
And we had it framed on the wall in the office for a while because it made us laugh.
Amazing.
I don't recommend doing that. It's wrong. But there you go. Hasn't Van Damme's got some new pilot? Is he on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something, isn't he?
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Johnson has just been has been confirmed to get a whole series, and I will say the first episode was awesome.
Oh, was it?
I've seen that.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
Did you ever see JCVD, the movie? I think it's Flair.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good film, you know.
That bit really goes up into the ceiling. That was really touching. I've got to say. Yeah.
When he's crying, it's like a confessional thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Dan, do you often get touched by Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme blow up doll. The
just constantly does the splits.
Yeah, and I love the fact that his first movie was Breakdance 2 Electric Boogaloo as a background dancer.
Which is a far superior sequel, let's be honest.
I believe so.
The Man Can Dance. Just check out that the kickboxer scene in the bar. Kills it.
Oh my god, that's painful. I mean, is that bit in the new, is it Coors Light or something, the advert where he's dancing in an eye? It's painful. Oh my god.
There's a bit on a bit more Van Damme knowledge. He's like, there's a clip on YouTube where he's dancing with like a hostess on a TV show, and he's got a visible erection when they move apart.
Yeah, I've seen that. Well, not his visible erection. Yeah. I tell you what, we missed out on a trick here. We should have called it the trivia question, like Jean-Claude Van Damme, and then like people can just ask him questions about Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I don't know everything about Van Damme.
You liar! You liar!
I'm pretty sure Van Damme could give us a go on there.
Yeah, he loves him.
Yeah. Van Damme questions.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
We love you all, and thank you very much for this episode. Yeah. I think it's been a good one to kick this off.
Yeah, we're going to declare next week's subject.
We haven't done our recommendations yet.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Dan, calm down.
Sorry, I thought you was wrapping it up.
I am. Let's recommend something. Let's send the people out there out with a book to check out over the next coming week. Tony.
Okay. Right. Typically, I've got two.
Oh, here we go. First week, he's already taken a piss.
Right, first one is a book from Centrala, who we've talked about in the past. They did that book about the two Ku Klux Klan members getting lost in the woods, which I really liked. This is by Søren Mosdal. It's part financed by the Danish Arts Foundation, and it's called Erik the Red, King of Winter. And it's about, let me read his name out, Erik Thorvaldsson, who is also called Erik the Red. He left Iceland after a bloody feud with one of his neighbours, and he basically found Greenland, called it, and he became the king of it for quite a long time, which was unusual back then because kings didn't last long. This is, imagine Mike Mignola, if he went to an exhibition of Arthur. Does anyone know Arthur Dove?
It's no.
A sort of experimental artist, Arthur Dove exhibition, which is real sort of abstracty stuff. Imagine Mignola went and saw an Arthur Dove exhibition whilst tripping on mushrooms. This comic would be the result of the art that he would then produce. It is fucking mental. It's completely violent. Awesome. Nihilistic. It's just so brutal. If you know the TV series Vikings, which everyone's into at the moment, everyone watches on the train, if you turn that up again, it's kind of a weird one to sum up. It's a little bit rough around the edges. It's got a little bit of a punk aesthetic to the drawings and the art. And it's by Søren Mosdal. It's on sale currently, I think, for £16.20 at the Centrala website, which is centralacomics.co.uk. If you go, my other book, very quickly, was given to me by the mighty Bob Fingerman, and it's called Ray and Joe, The Story of a Man and His Dead Friend. by Charles Rodriguez, and it's a book about a guy whose friend dies. He doesn't really... It's a bit like Weekend at Bernie's, but sort of just fucking weirder. and he doesn't want his friend... The first half of the book is about Ray and Joe, and then there's other stories that come on later in it. It's from Drawn and Quarterly, and there's things like he tries to get a taxi, and the taxi driver said, "What is he, drunk or dead? I don't take drunks." And he says, "It's okay, he's dead." So he gets in the taxi with him. He has sort of conversations with him. He goes on a date with his dead friend's ex-wife, and he insists on taking his dead friend with him, which his wife finds quite weird because she's trying to get off with him. He meets a woman who's got a special kind of herpes, and he touches her door handle, so he gets herpes. It's proper out there mental stuff. Really nice. If you can find it, it's by Drawn and Quarterly. It's $29.99 wise, but have a look on Amazon or what other booksellers also sell it and get it there. Very good. There you go, my two.
Nice. Dan?
Nice one. I had issue one of Cognition sent through by...
Nice.
Yeah, mine's waiting at the post office for me at the moment.
Absolutely fantastic. Cool. Just... a high quality product from beginning to end. He really done well on this Kickstarter, and it's got like this sticker, postcards, prints from great artists such as Andrew Pauly, Rory Donald, Andy Blore, Dan Butcher, that wanker.
Hey.
Dan Harris.
That wanker.
So yeah, that's an absolute bargain. We've got the link to it on our Awesome Comics Facebook page, but we'll stick it in the show notes. Well worth checking out.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, and also Comic House issue 2 available to buy right now.
So is it out to buy now as well, is it? Oh, good.
Yeah, through the site, obviously, and I think it'll be popping up at conventions. It should be issue 1, 2, and 3 at Thought Bubble. So.
Nice. Not too far away.
Pick them out.
My pick for this week? Yeah. There was a couple, really. I bought a few comics on Comixology this week. One of them... was A Fix. Another one was Shipwreck by Warren Ellis and Phil Hester, two of my favourite creators.
Ooh, yeah.
Phil
Hester's Aftershock Comics, isn't it?
Yeah. Phil Hester's one of my favourite artists. He's been responsible for some of my favourite books as a writer, let alone artist. Yeah. I'd say check that one out, but I'm not going to talk too much about that one because I need to read it a couple more times to get my head around it because it is... it is trippy.
Right.
Yeah, I need to... At the moment, I don't know whether I'm thick or not, but I don't quite understand it. I know it's really good, and there's some great scenes, but I need to give it another couple of reads, which...
fair enough.
Which I don't... Sometimes, with some comics, if I have that sort of feeling, I don't always feel the need to go back and read them. But this one, I think it says a lot that I want to go back and get the most out of it. But... what I want to recommend is the book Reborn from Image, which is the book from Mark Miller and Greg Capullo. Hey?
What did you think of it? I've heard differing opinions.
I really liked it. I went into it, I didn't know anything about it. I bought it purely because I was interested. I was going to give the first issue a shot. Based on the two creators. Mark Miller's been on a bit of a sort of renaissance, should we say, I don't think he ever really had a downturn, but and Greg Capullo's obviously, it's his first stuff since Batman, isn't it, really? And it's the setup of it is basically when you die, you don't necessarily die, you go, instead of going to like heaven or hell, you go somewhere and you wake up in another world, and you look completely different, and there's a big war going on between, there's so much to it, I think. The first issue mainly concentrates on this character who's dying, so it talks very much about life. It's very much Mark Miller, someone who's very sick, and they're looking towards the end of their life, and they know it's coming to an end. And then that happens.
Okay.
And then they wake up, and they're young, and... they're in the middle of a war zone with these huge spaceships flying over, and then they see their father again, who died like 40, 50 years ago. And, there's axes, there's dragons, there's laser guns, But the most of this first issue is based a lot in the real world when someone's basically dying, they're at the end of their life. So it's quite poignant, I thought, the first issue. It does start off with a bang, quite literally. It starts off with a sniper attack.
Right.
Which is in the past. So, and visually, I think Capullo's just amazing, personally. I know with a lot of the big name artists. Some people like them, some people not so much, but I've always been a fan of his work.
Yeah.
And certainly when it goes into the other world, sort of not on Earth, the colours just get cranked up. Like, you know, it's full on Technicolor.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the first issue, you know, so much I'm going to go back for the next one. The designs look beautiful. I think Capullo does some great sort of panel layouts. Like when the, I don't want to, it's not really spoiling it too much because this woman obviously passes away, but there's a splash page of her literally, her life coming to an end, and there's like scenes from her life just sort of like shattering like glass over the top of like her new form. And that was just a beautiful page. That would make an amazing poster. But yeah, Reborn, I'd say definitely give it a shout. You know,
who was inking them on it? Was it Danny Mickey, was it?
The inker is Jonathan Glapion.
Oh, okay. Right.
The colourist is FCO Placentia. Oh, I hope I said that right. And the letters and design are Nate Pikus of Blambot.
Blambot. He was doing that. We're doing the colours on Invincible.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's really good. Does a lot of line holds in his work.
Yeah. I highly recommend going to Blambot as well if you're, you know, if you're just starting out in the lettering game. I think it's definitely one to check out.
Nice.
Yeah. So Reborn was a pleasant surprise. I'm definitely going to be on that for the next couple of issues. See where it goes. See where Mark Miller takes us. Who knows? Maybe one day #MillerWatch. He'll talk to us.
Yeah. I might send him another message so he can ignore me again.
Well, at the moment, Paul Moore brought to our attention that he's appeared on another podcast this very evening.
What?
Yeah, oh, no.
There you go.
I feel like my heart is broken.
The, face.
The Gamma Dames, they've got a YouTube channel podcast, and so they've got a Q&A with him. So, you know, there's no tears. I think Paul thought we were going to be upset by it, but there's no tears because if you ask me,
Paul likes to upset me. He likes it.
That means that Mark is open to going on people's podcasts. So this is a good thing.
He just clearly hates us.
Yeah. But why, Mark? We love you.
Don't listen to that episode where we talk about Nemesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, just scrub that from the record. Delete that.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I've not heard that episode.
No.
Cut that bit.
We'll like you. We
called the Nemesis Broadside episode.
Like, if you want to get your lawyers in touch with us, Mark, to sue Dan, then there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesome, and likewise, if you like this episode, folks, let us know. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any books or anything that, or any news that you think we should know about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Like us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Get in touch with the Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, which was vibrant this week, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And we're going to be looking to make some stuff a bit more interactive on the Facebook group as well. So
yeah. We're encourage interaction, but we're going to aid it a bit more this week.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on awesomecomics.podbean.com. If it was on iTunes, give us a lovely review. Let us know what you thought of this episode. You know, do you still love us, folks? We still love you. Don't we? Oh, why have they gone? They've gone quiet now. The one time they show it.
Loaded silence.
Oh, yeah, that'll be the name of this show. Thank you for listening, whether it was on the Stitcher or the Podnose network. It's just amazing. We love every listener we have. We're going to announce what the topic for the next episode is, which is quite a broad topic, actually, in a second. But before we do...
Right up our street.
Watch your wording there. Where can people find us online, Tony?
Ezoyes on Twitter, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. And I've got a few things going live soon on Down the Tubes, including some of the art in a preview of Eric the Red, which is well worth looking at.
Awesome.
Cool.
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanGoghComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanGoghComic.com.
Nice.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo and find out more about my comic @TheRedMouseFromMars.com. Now, you've heard what we're like. When we've got a topic, we need no help, do we? We can just roll with it. But what are we talking about next week? What topic in comics do you think is going to be lively when we talk about it?
Big, thick comment.
It's thick. It's
we can all get up.
This may not be a very long episode, yeah, but I'll certainly enjoy it.
After next week's episode, you're going to have to see a doctor.
Yeah. And all you will remember is my leering face.
Yeah. You'll probably listen to it in the dark.
But
in
hope you do.
At the end, hopefully it gets you where you need to be.
And there's a happy ending.
There's going to be a happy ending. Because next week, folks, we're going to be talking about sex in comics.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like to say that I suggested this one because it's episode 69.
Yeah.
Yay!
And we are actually indulging the filthy Tony Esmond.
It's going to be Carry On Awesome Comics Podcast.
Yeah. I mean, every fucking double entendre you can think of will be coming up.
It's going to be disgraceful. It's going to be filthy. Yeah. But also, I think it's a genuine topic. I mean, all jokes aside,
there is
stuff. There's some important stuff we can talk about, I think.
Look, sex is part of our lives. Well, part of your lives. I just get to do it on my own in the dark. And I think it's something that, as all areas of our lives, should be explored. Sex should be explored in comics. And we'd like to hear your opinions on how, why, and when it should be done.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Or if you agree with it. You may not think sex has a place in comics.
If you're a member of the Amish community, shame on you for listening to a podcast, but you might not approve of women in short skirts. I personally do approve of it.
But we love your beards.
Yes, we do.
We do. I mean, for instance, can't I know... I'll put money on... No, I'm not going to say that because people will listen to it and then they'll obviously mention it, won't they? No.
Right, tell us afterwards.
I'll show you afterwards. And you're going to miss out on that, folks. But right now, thank you for listening. Have a brilliant week. Read some comics. Stay positive about the comics world because it's only going to get better because we're not going anywhere. Yeah. We're going to try and ruin it, but no, we'll be fine. Stay awesome. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, just take care. Look after each other. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.